Revenue Committee for what, Monday, the 17th of March. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And I think we'll begin, and I will open a hearing on Senate Bill 788, 810, 811 all at once so that folks who want to testify can basically hit all of the bills rather than waiting around for each one to come up. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 788, Senate Bill 810, and Senate Bill 811. And so, Sean, instead of just us, why don't you come up and you can introduce the bills for us.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave. I'm here on behalf of Senator Klarna, who sends her regrets for not being able to be here today. We were informed on Friday that these bills would be up in committee today, and her schedule had already scheduled her to be out of the Capitol, but her not being here in no way diminishes her support for these bills. I'd like to thank you for hearing these bills today. And just a little background, why Senator Klarna had introduced them. As Republican caucus leader, she was asked to introduce these three bills in order to start to address problems with our state's budget. These bills are a temporary reprioritization of our state's spending and revenue generation. While Senator Klarna is a strong advocate of the arts and is well aware of the benefits that the Cultural Trust has offered all Oregonians, the Republican senators feel that moving forward with these concepts in our current budget crisis is an appropriate action. Senate Bill 788, and I have submitted -1 amendments as written, reallocates money to the Common School Fund from the sale of certain state property, but with the -1 amendments, which unfortunately weren't able to be incorporated prior to the drop-dead date on the Senate side, re-earmark those funds to the general fund. Now, Senate Bill 788 would include the sale of Mill Creek property, and from conversations that I've had, I think that property is currently estimated around $14 million, and I guess I would have to default to revenue for the exact number on that sale. Senate Bill 811, jumping out of order here a little bit, was also brought by the Senate Republican Caucus. In order to suspend the tax credit for the account from the date of passage of this bill until January 06, and with my conversations with the secretary or the Cultural Trust administrator, they have submitted two different numbers to revenue, anywhere from $18 to $8.8 million in generated funds over the next biennium. And I think they had revised it to a lower number given the current situation. Senate Bill 810 was introduced to ensure that the current reserve funds within the account wouldn't dwindle. The bill essentially prohibits the Secretary of State from making grants and other distributions from the account. And the feeling behind this was to ensure that the account is in capable levels when it's reactivated. So just to close, we've got the -1 amendments that we would urge the committee to consider for Senate Bill 788. We feel the general fund is a more appropriate place for these monies from the sale of the Mill Creek property. And I would be able to I'd be happy to attend to any questions that I'd be capable of answering, and the senator would also be happy to answer when she's back in the Capitol tomorrow.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions for Senator Ringo?
Thanks for coming. I support these bills.
Thank you.
At least the first two, and I guess I'm just curious on the third. And I'm not sure. I guess I'd like a little more explanation. right now the Secretary of State is the one who has the ability to make grants. And if the Secretary of State sees a grant opportunity that he believes is a good opportunity, I don't understand why he shouldn't be able to take that opportunity.
Essentially, the three bills were set out just as a discussion point.
Mm-hmm.
One part of the concept we felt needed to be split into these three different bills in order to give options to the committee. So, Chair, Senator Ringo, you make a very valid point. I think if there's an opportunity there and the Secretary sees purpose behind it, then they should have the option.
Thank you.
Further?
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Ross McKean and Christina McNitt, do y'all want to come up together and talk about all three? Or?
Senator Deckert, members of the committee, my name is Ross McKean. I'm the interim executive director of the Oregon Cultural Trust, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak to these three bills. I'll cover all three in my comments, if I may. And I'd also like to take an opportunity, if you'll indulge me, to just give a little bit of background to the trust, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, but I think between the time that this was adopted by the 2001 legislature and plotted by editorials around the state and looked at as a model for this kind of public sector investment in culture, and the pain of five special sessions and now the so-called sixth special session, it's kind of become abstract, and I think it's good to kind of go back and for what it's worth talk a little bit about what we've accomplished, if I can do that before moving to the specific comments, so you understand that the impact that those will have, as well as in combination with the Senate Bill 859, which recently passed, and what that means for us. One of the things I want to also be clear about in this is that the statute that established the Cultural Trust laid out several formulas for funding. So with regard to the question of grant opportunities and the like, those are defined as a process and with numbers and percentages applied to them. That also applies to the notion of preserving the fund to create an endowment over time and freezing it through Senate Bill 810. The law already establishes that 58% of the fund in any given year will be retained for creating an endowment fund. So we're already under the statute prevented from spending it all. But first as background, one of the things I want to start with is the notion that the trust was created by citizens through a grassroots effort over about a four-year period. So really a charge to create a new, creative, innovative approach to public sector investment that took us away from this pain of asking for general fund and the pressure of doing that and to seek a new way of doing it. And so at the time it seemed like a good approach that would get us out of this difficult budget cycles that we're in, and was created really from a lot of work around the state by dozens and hundreds of citizens who met in groups and regional meetings, led by a task force that included business leaders and civic leaders and cultural organizations that participated in it, and just received a groundswell of support to get us where we are. Since being adopted over the past year, we've invested a fair amount of state resources and, more importantly, or equally importantly, a lot of volunteer time from these cultural and civic leaders and the business community to help launch this program. We've put quite a bit of work into developing the communications about it and building administrative systems to manage it, from databases to track the donors and to respond to them, to the credit card e-commerce online option for donations. So we've put a fair amount of investment into creating and establishing this. And so one of our concerns is as things are frozen or restricted or cut back, in essence, some of these could contribute to the demise of the trust and basically wiping out the investment we've made. So even after we get through a economic recovery period and get back to looking at making this kind of investment, we'll need to recreate a lot of that and start over again. In terms of what we've accomplished to date, as you've probably heard, in December, the first time for the tax credit, we received over $1.6 million in gifts from individuals and businesses. That worked out to be about 4,500 taxpayers who stepped forward in this one-month period to contribute. They liked the idea of directing a portion of their tax payments towards this investment. Part of our program, one-third of our funds that the statute allow us to spend, one-third of that money goes to counties and tribes to establish cultural plans in their communities. We've spent time working with county commissioners and citizen groups in all counties to develop those groups. We now have 550 citizens involved and appointed to serve on cultural planning coalitions in communities, in every community in Oregon. They're ready to work. They've started their work. They're enthusiastic about this. And their work is to define and find ways to support cultural investment that's important to them. So that work is underway. And we have a grant program that a third of their funds will go towards, for which we've received 180 grant applications from every county in the state, representing over $5 million in requests. With the loss of the Boardman money, we are down to about $200,000 available for that grant program, or about 4% of the need. So we've done a lot, but with very limited resources, and our concern is, of course, for the future. With regard to the specific bills, Senate Bill 788, combined with the loss of the Boardman money, really leaves us with nothing from the innovative idea of taking surplus lands and putting them back into productive use and back on the property rolls and funding this from a new source. We understand the demands of the budget now. One of the concerns with this particular bill is that because the Salem property does not have real commercial value for another 5 to 10 years, according to the Department of Administrative Services and the consultants they've hired to do that analysis, redesignating it to either the Common School Fund or with the amendments to the General Fund does not really help in the 2003-2005 biennium from our perspective, because the best and highest use value will only come after extensive land use planning and infrastructure development. So in terms of an immediate budget issue, it doesn't have that value right now. When it does have value, we do estimate that, I think the previous testimony said it would be about $14 million. I believe that the land use planning has estimated it at $27 million for the total property, of which we would get half, so about $13.5 million, but that's 5 to 10 years from now. It would be a significant part of our long-term sustainability if we basically have things moving slowly as we kind of limp along over the next few years. Our hope had been that that property, when it was sold in 5 years, would be something that would boost the level of our endowment up so that we could be sustainable without seeking private foundation support to support our operations. So that loss would be a problem for us. On Senate Bill 810, our primary concern is that the funds, because the Boardman money's been taken away, the funds that are there are the gifts that were made by individuals and businesses. Those individuals gave them with the intent of supporting the trust and the program that we laid out, that the statute lays out for how those funds will be used. A formula defines how that money will be used. So freezing the funds at this point goes against the intent of those donors and their expectations for how those funds would be used. And as I said earlier, the formula for how we use our funds already establishes that a significant portion is used to build an endowment over time. The other factor with freezing our ability to use these monies is the statute establishes that we can spend only 7.5% of funds that we distribute for our own administrative purposes. So this freezing essentially takes out any level of support, which is already pretty minor, for us to operate administratively. So going forward into the next biennium, we would have no source of public sector money or money out of the trust to be able to support our pretty much bare bones operating budget. So that's a direct impact of that piece. And then on Senate Bill 811, freezing the tax credit basically leaves us unable to move forward. Essentially mothballs our administrative operations. We would basically close up shop, and in 3 years would need to recreate everything to kind of get moving again. We have the tax expenditure report shows the cultural trust at something like $18 million over the biennium as the impact. We have already submitted to legislative fiscal revise numbers based on lower expectations of how many people will participate. That's roughly half of that amount. That's not reflected in the printed report, but it's been reported to legislative fiscal is down below $9 million over the biennium, so we've already made that adjustment. And I think the last thing I would say is just our perspective, even in these tough times, is that investing in culture in this manner has direct economic benefits in cultural tourism, in fostering a creative workforce that will be the key to economic development in the future, to attracting and retaining businesses in both rural and urban communities, and to contributing to educational quality. All of these quality of life issues, I think, are an important part of the solution for the state of Oregon as it seeks economic recovery. We think we're part of the solution, and we think that this is a wise investment, and appreciate any continued support we can get. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one question, and I know this kind of came up pretty quickly. I'm wondering if y'all have kind of a 101 on the cultural trust. I found myself pretty supportive last session of it, and at least conceptually supportive, but these three bills certainly bring the question fast forward in front of me that I would like and I realize you didn't have time to put it together for today, but perhaps you have it. If you do, I would like to leave today with it. If not, we can disseminate it to the committee, but something that really tells the story of the genesis of the idea, how it's been put into practice, and hopefully success that stories from around the state that y'all might be enjoying. I think that would definitely help as we jump into these issues.
Great. We have elements of that and can certainly refine that and get it to you quickly.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, which includes a cultural trust, but also its cultural partners, including the Oregon Arts Commission, the Council for the Humanities, the Oregon Historical Society, the Oregon Heritage Commission, the State Historic Preservation Office. And I want to thank you for bringing these bills forward in a public hearing format today, because a lot has changed with respect to the trust and how the trust affects its partners since the so-called special session number 6. I think that you can break it down into the short-term solutions and what we would like to see as some long-term solutions. And I think my takeaway from this hearing today is to ask to be invited to come and sit down with you as you consider which of the over 30 bills that affect the trust and its partners that are circulating in the legislature right now will move forward in a long-term solution. Rather than piecemealing them at a time, we'd like to sit down, help you think outside of the box, how we can bring these cultural partners together so that we can put together a comprehensive plan for the long term. That being said, for the short term, maybe I can assist a little bit verbally on how the trust works, and then we can follow up with some takeaways later. The trust primarily had three funding mechanisms. One was the tax credit, which raised $1.65 million starting December 1st in 2002. The second source of funds was from the surplus sales of the Boardman property. That was $3.3 million. And also the trust is slated to receive surplus sales from future land sales, including Mill Creek, which is what one of the bills affects today. And thirdly, the trust receives funds from a cultural trust license plate, which just came online in February, if I believe. So from a short-term perspective, I'd kind of like to share with you what happened in special session number 6. We recognize that there were some incredibly difficult decisions and funding programs that the legislature had to consider, and the $3.3 million from the Boardman sale was zeroed out, so that went back to general fund dollars. And the trust is no longer supported with a pot of money from any surplus sales that they have received. In exchange, if you will, for that, the Cultural Advocacy Coalition asked the Legislative Ways and Means Committee to consider some amendments in that rebalance package that allowed the trust to expend its funds now rather than its statutory date of July 1st, 2003, so that according to the statutory formulas that are already established, 42% of the money in the fund, again, the tax credit money is all we're talking about now, can be expended in its formula, so it supports the cultural partners. And the reason that we came to the legislature to do that is because our cultural partners who received general fund dollars were zeroed out. So we are hoping that with that amendment and with the expenditure limitations for grants already received by the trust, that we were able to step forward in that void in a public-private partnership to help the Arts Commission and our other funding or our other cultural partners so they can keep their doors open for the short term through the end of this biennium while we all sit down and look at what types of long-term solutions there may be. So I think that kind of covers the short term. And again, in the long term, there are over 30 bills that I'm tracking that would either directly or indirectly affect the trust and its partners. And we would just like to sit down and come up with a direction among all of our partners and legislative leadership and the trust about how we can best maximize that to be able to be in a position to grow in the long term when this economy turns around so that we can assist rural communities and cultural tourism and the economies as we had originally intended, although I think everyone recognizes it won't be in the same level as the hopes were in 2001.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think that's all we have for today. Anyone else wish to testify on the cultural trust? So I would just reiterate, I know some of these discussions on tax credits are going to begin even in the end of this week, and so I think it would certainly behoove the cultural trust, it would certainly, I think, help us as we start to gauge those decisions to get, and I don't feel like I have it today, a full grasp of, so we make good decisions on this issue.
Thank you. We'll do that. And if I can add some information, I think I failed to mention that when a person receives a tax credit from the state for their contribution to the cultural trust, they have already made a matching contribution to a qualified organization somewhere in the state or in their local community. So it's, in a way, two for one.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
That's Kathy Ryan's birthday.
Anyone else? Cultural trust? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on 811, 788, 810, and adjourn Senate Revenue.